Okay, it's 8:03, so why don't we begin? All right. So the first message we said is anyone who is on the call, we have about six people on the phone, you're automatically muted. So if you would like to speak, would you please sign in through the computer link? That will help. And then we can share with you. Okay, so let's get started. So we are back again. Good evening, everybody. Welcome once again for our monthly call. Thank you for taking the time on a September evening to take part in Amnesty's monthly membership call. Now, I want to extend a warm welcome to everyone who's joining us for the first time, and a very special thank you for those who are returning. We're really happy to have you back with us. So we just turned a corner into fall. School groups are back. The regional conferences are coming up soon. Members and local groups are gearing up and taking on lots of new human rights initiatives, including the upcoming Right for Rights campaign. Now, you know, if you read the news, it seems that this year has brought us a lot of intractable challenges, and we've witnessed a lot of examples of deteriorating respect for human rights, both here and abroad. One such example is in Turkey, where we've seen a downward human rights spiral following the failed coup attempt last year. Now, earlier this year, Turkish authorities detained both the director and the chair of Amnesty Turkey, our own colleagues, as well as some other human rights defenders. So on this call, we'd like to look more deeply into Turkey, Turkey's current human rights landscape, and update you on the detentions of these human rights defenders. We'll also cover some actions you can take and our day of action, which we've planned for October. Now, as always, with these calls, it's our intent to provide a forum for open communication between our members, students, member leaders, and groups. We provide a space for member-to-member communication, sharing. It's a forum for you to share your ideas, learn about Amnesty actions, priorities, new developments. So we're glad that you're all a part of it tonight. My name's Edwin Gore. I've been part of Amnesty for practically 30 years. Started out with Group 9 in Manhattan, which is still going strong. And so let me introduce you to our speakers for this evening. Each one provides a unique perspective on our approach to Turkey tonight. They are Emily Walsh, who's Human Rights Defenders Campaigner at Amnesty International, Howard Eisenstadt, who's AIUSA Country Specialist for Turkey, and Sierra Benice, who's AIUSA Legislative Coordinator for Florida. So technically we're using a webinar platform, but we still want to preserve this conference call feel. So we will unmute all those who have joined. Now, we certainly want you to share your questions, your comments, but as courtesy though, we ask that you sort of mute yourself when you're not speaking, you know, so we don't get noise. And when you do speak, please state your name, where you're calling from, and any role you might play in Amnesty. Okay, so those are two little ground rules. We will allow time for any questions, comments you may have, so please, please feel free to share. So let's get started for tonight's call. Emily, could you please introduce yourself, provide a little background, and we can begin.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Ed, and thank you everyone for being with us this evening. Looking forward to the conversation. So as Ed mentioned, my name is Emily Walsh. I'm the Human Rights Defenders Campaigner for Amnesty. I've been with Amnesty for upwards of 8 or 9 years. I got started as a student in a student group. I became a student group leader for several years, then started with our Individuals at Risk program, and now I'm working on the Human Rights Defenders campaign. So super happy to speak about the work and to find ways to partner with each of you and your groups. So before starting into talking about specifically the case of İdil Eser, Taner Kılıç, and the Istanbul 10 in Turkey, I want to talk a bit about the Human Rights Defenders campaign overall. And first, I'm going to start out with the need for the campaign, why this is a focus for Amnesty. And I want you to imagine a world without the people who stand up for human rights. So think about the activists that you most respect and admire, people whose cases you might have worked on through Amnesty, for instance. And now imagine that they were never able to do their work. They were never able to speak out or document abuses, share violations, or stand up for what's right because the circumstance in their country or community made it impossible for them to safely do their work. At this moment, people all around the world, activists, are risking their safety and freedom in order to defend human rights. They're facing harassment, surveillance, physical attacks, imprisonment, or as we say, persecution through prosecution, and some are even killed, and this is just for doing what's right. These people are human rights defenders, and they come from all walks of life. They can be journalists, students, farmers, lawyers, and more. They're ordinary people who take a stand against injustice, and you might very well likely be a human rights defender yourself. And we're witnessing a global crackdown on defenders. So the threats that they face vary by region of the world and also by other intersectional identities. But just for a bit of context, in 2016, human rights defenders were killed for peacefully standing up for human rights in 22 countries. They were targeted with smear campaigns in over 63 countries and arrested or detained just for their work in 68 countries and attacked or otherwise threatened in 94 countries around the world. So this is the background for one of Amnesty's two global priority campaigns, which began recently and is actually going to last all the way through December 2019. There'll be more opportunities to engage. And throughout this time, the global movement, so other Amnesty members around the entire world, will be working on the campaign supporting and defending the defenders. So the goal of the campaign is to make sure that by the end of 2019, human rights defenders at risk around the world are better protected from attacks, intimidation, and harassment. And we'll do this by campaigning on specific cases and themes that represent threats to human rights defenders around the world. And I can talk more about those themes during the Q&A, perhaps. At AAUSA, so in the US, we're focused on resolving five priority human rights defender cases. So these cases represent one from each region of the world, and each also represents these diverse concerns and threats that are facing activists. We've just finalized these cases and materials about each case, including ways to engage your group members and other audiences and take meaningful actions and develop actions of your own will be shared very shortly with everyone. And right now, the case that is the highest priority is the Istanbul 10, who we'll be talking about today. That includes our colleague Adila Ser, the director of Amnesty Turkey, and nine other human rights defenders who were arrested while attending a routine training, a routine human rights workshop in Turkey. And for context, I want you to just think, I'm sure many of you are planning to join us for this fall's regional conferences. So imagine that you are arrested just for attending those workshops. This could be considered similar to what happened in Turkey. And I'm going to turn it over to Howard to speak more about the situation in Turkey, the systemic situation that resulted in this really absurd violation, and more about the situation of Idil, Taner, and the other activists who are now being investigated under terrorism charges just for their work. So I'm happy to, really excited to speak with you all today. Glad that you're here. Going to turn it over to Howard now, and then we'll be able to talk more about ways that you can get involved and that you can involve other folks in this campaign.
Hey, Emily, before we go on, does anybody have any questions? Anything they'd like to ask Emily about what she's presented? Anyone? Okay, so we can move on to Howard.
Okay, thanks Edwin, and thank you, Emily, for that great overview. So my name is Howard Eisenstadt. I am one of the Turkey country specialists for Amnesty International. I've worked with Amnesty since 2006. As you probably can gather from my office, I'm also an academic. I work on Turkey in my day job as well. And the for the past 4 or 5 years, we've been watching in Turkey a general decline in human rights conditions. This intensified in June 2013 with the Gezi protests, it intensified again with the breakdown of the peace process with the PKK, the Kurdish Workers Party, and finally, as Edwin suggested, it intensified most aggressively with the attempted coup in July 2016, and the extent to which the rights conditions have declined is really quite shocking. The in the wake of the coup, we saw a massive crackdown on the press. There had been a crackdown on the press ongoing for several years, but since the attempted coup, we had more than 100 media outlets closed. We have currently between 150 and 170 journalists behind bars. We saw the sacking of more than 100,000 civil servants. We saw the detention of some 50,000 others, most of whom have been detained on very vague charges with no individual evidence held against them. Amnesty, of course, has been on the job and monitoring these abuses. We've issued a number of reports, and as we did so, as we highlighted the rights abuses that were underway, Amnesty increasingly became the target of both the pro-government press, and it's at this point a largely government-controlled press in Turkey, and of government officials themselves. After our first report on the resurgence of torture in Turkey, President Erdogan went up and immediately started berating Amnesty International. That's continued since then. We've been called spies. We've been called terrorists, and you know we've attempted to both do our jobs and report on rights abuses and investigate rights abuses, and also take care to not endanger the folks working for Amnesty in Turkey. In June of this year, the chair of Amnesty International, Taner Kılıç, was detained with 21 other lawyers in the Izmir area in Western Turkey. It wasn't initially clear whether he had been targeted as a member of Amnesty or not. That became clear the next day when pro-government media and government officials advertised the fact that he was a member of Amnesty. And we began campaigning particularly vigorously on this issue immediately, but only a month later, as Emily and highlighted, we had a routine training session where leading members of human rights organizations, and this, they're across the political spectrum, there were sort of devout religious organizations, there was Helsinki Watch representatives, there were people from women's rights groups, and there was as well Idi Letser, our director, all sort of rounded up, including the trainers, and taken to jail. Eight of them continue, including our director, to be held in pretrial detention. So Taner, in a separate case, is being held in pretrial detention. Idil and the other and seven other human rights defenders are being held in pretrial detention. Pretrial detention in Turkey can last legally. It can last 7 years. In practice, it's often months and months, 8 months to a year before even the first hearing. That is to say, even the first the beginnings of a case are begun. So we don't know when Taner and Idil are likely to be released. And as such, this case has become a top priority for Amnesty. And it's a top priority for several reasons. It's a top priority because, of course, there are people. And this represents the first time in the history of Amnesty International, which has been working for human rights since 1961. It's the first time in our history that we've had a director and chair simultaneously jailed. In practice, governments are very wary of that. They recognize Amnesty's international profile, and they're wary of directly targeting us in this way. It's happened here. It's important because it represents the cascading breakdown of any barriers on human rights violations in Turkey. Effectively, they've gone after the journalists, they've gone after lawyers, they've gone after judges, they've gone after everyday people who happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. The fact that they're going after these rights defenders suggest that there are no sort of internal barriers left to in the purge, and that we can that if it goes unchecked, we're going to see more and worse going forward. And finally, this is a real challenge for Amnesty International and for the whole idea of international rights monitoring. The fact that Turkey has targeted and jailed leadership of Amnesty International. It undermines our ability to work in Turkey. It undermines our ability to work worldwide, because the question becomes: if Turkey can get away with this crackdown, if Turkey can target our leadership, then any other country that's unhappy with the reporting that we're doing can do the same. And Amnesty has had, because of its reputation, because of its long history, because of the importance that it has within human rights work overall, has had a kind of diplomatic immunity, if you will. Even authoritarian regimes have been wary of targeting Amnesty directly. Turkey has done that, and it's done it with, so far, very few costs. And so for us, this becomes a question of, are we going to continue to be able to do the work that we've done for decades? And our colleagues in countries like Thailand and the Philippines, and Venezuela, are looking at this case and want to see what's going to happen. Because if it's unchecked here, it's unchecked everywhere. So that was my initial chat.
Okay. That would mean we're free to open it up to questions for you. Everyone, questions for Howard.
Hi, this is Chip. May I ask a question?
Of course. Go ahead.
Howard, could you also, you've done a great job, thank you, of summarizing the status, but what sorts of pressures are we seeing from the different stakeholders internationally, Amnesty, its partners, politicians?
Right. You know. Thanks. In the immediate aftermath, there were strong calls from a lot of different countries and worldwide. There's been great action from South Korea, Japan, the EU, the United States, Canada. The United States State Department had put forward some very strongly worded statements that Amnesty was very grateful for. We've had certainly a lot of interest and some important statements from representatives in Congress and the Senate. We have not had a similar sort of response from the administration, from Secretary Tillerson, from President Trump. And I think that sort of parallels what's going on in a lot of different countries, right? So there's sort of this official response from the bureaucracy that this can't stand, that this is unacceptable, but at a practical level, business is going on as usual. I think it was just last week that President Erdogan was in New York and had a sort of very collegial conversation with President Trump, and President Trump described him as, you know, getting very high marks and working in a very tough neighborhood, and not a word about human rights. And I'm afraid that's that sort of a gap in messaging, right? Sort of the statements from the bureaucracy on the one hand, and the sense that in the end it's business as usual is something that's very troubling for us. Now, in fairness, we have been playing a very delicate game in terms of what we've been asking for, particularly over the last couple of months, because there's we even tried to create a space after the initial campaigning, which the Turkish government might be able to back off, that we might see some traction. We didn't want to paint them into a corner. And without going into too many details, I think that there were signs that might be working, but we do plan, and we are slowly increasing pressure again. That quiet period is coming to an end, and we expect to be intensifying that pressure and intensifying the calls on our governments to call Turkey to task on this.
Great, thanks, Chip. Any other questions?
This is Emily. I saw a question from the chat area about how Idil and Taner have been treated in detention and what we're doing to support them there. Howard, if you're happy to take that, then that's great. Otherwise, I can address that as well later.
Sure. So they're being held in different places. Taner is being held in overcrowded conditions, but with fellow professionals. It's effectively, I think the number I saw was maybe 13 people for a cell meant for six. But certainly not dangerous conditions. He's been able to get some visitation rights, though not some of the special visitation rights that are normally given during holidays. Idil had a period in which she was not given access to her lawyer. She was initially in solitary confinement. She's now in the general population. She's doing much better. For many months, she was not allowed to see anybody besides her lawyer, and access to lawyers is very limited in these conditions. It's one hour a week. She wasn't allowed to give access to anybody else because she had no living family members. So friends weren't allowed to visit her, and she had no one else. That situation seems to be coming to an end. I think his title is General Secretary, Salih Celti, went to Turkey a couple of weeks ago, and as part of the negotiations, was able to visit her. It had been her first visit to anybody besides her lawyer in that time. He was able to carry messages from her colleagues and friends, tell her about, you know, how her cat is doing. And we have hope, at least, that her friends will now be able to apply for special status to visit her.
And we did receive information that she has been allowed visits from her friends. They have successfully visited her since we made those demands.
Okay.
So so it's very good news and does show small developments in progress and that this pressure is working.
Howard or Emily, I'm not sure which. I understand they're supposed to be, they have a date for a trial or something at the end of October. Is that right?
Yeah, that's new. Howard, would you like to take that?
So yeah, these are preliminary trials, basically, to determine if there's enough of a case to go forward. We have hope that the trial dates was actually brought forward in Tanner's case, which is one of the reasons why we have a sense that pressure is in fact working, or one of the reasons. That would be a important test of whether the case goes forward. It would be an opportunity if the government wants to back down, and our sense is that that's a debate within the government, whether this has turned out to be too costly or not. If the government wants to back down, that would be an opportunity to do so.
Yeah, and so so this is just for Tanner. So the other ones don't have a trial date set or a hearing date set. But paradoxically, it's important for them to have a hearing date set, because only once they're charged can we say that to drop the charges and let them go. And there's more of a chance of that happening at that point. But yeah, it's October 26th. So we'll be sharing news as it develops.
Hi, this is David Davenport, LC for DC. And my question is about what are everyday people in Turkey thinking about the human rights situation? Are they aware of the number of human rights defenders that are being detained, especially from Amnesty? And if they are, how are they feeling? Are they feeling like they want to go out and protest, or are they afraid and staying at home?
So Turkey's a really polarized country, effectively a 50-50 country. And there's certainly people who are appalled by these detentions. I'd say that for a Turkish audience, the case of the human rights defenders is an example of a general rule. And that goes for that 50% or so of the country that's deeply uncomfortable with the way things are going. And it's also true for that part of the country that's supportive of the government and thinks that this is, a necessary action. It's important to recognize, and when we're campaigning, it's important to recognize that Turkey suffered a highly traumatic event in the attempted coup of July 15th. The parliament was bombed, civilians were killed by the military. There were firefights between security forces in the big cities. There were airplanes and gun helicopter gunships buzzing urban areas. And the one of the successes of the Turkish government has been convincing a large portion of the population that effectively all of these steps, the sacking of 100,000 civil servants, the mass detentions of tens of thousands of individuals from all walks of life, and the targeting of these human rights violators is effectively a necessary step in fighting terror.
And if I could add to that, one of the reasons that that the global movement decided to have more of a quiet period after a period of really intense mobilization on a global scale was to provide space for some of those more moderate voices to come out. And what we saw actually was that half the battle in Turkey is the domestic propaganda machine, which is saying that they're terrorists and criminals and deserve to be imprisoned. But once we had that quiet period, we saw more moderate voices emerge, starting to question the conditions of their detention and the situation and why they're being detained. And so it's not it's not all black or white, but there is, you know, it's the domestic propaganda machine is a strong force to contend with.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, I think that raises an interesting point. Thank you, David, for bringing that up. And Howard, you or Emily, I just asked this too, because, you know, you think, like what I put in the email message is that 50,000 people have been arrested, 130 media outlets have been closed, 150 journalists in prison. I mean, are people aware of this? I mean, is there any kind of anti-movement, you know, going on there?
Everybody's aware of it. The issue is the values that they associate with, right? There are an awful lot of people who say, look, there was an attempt by the military to overthrow the elected government of this country. And of course, we are going to have extraordinary measures to protect our democracy. And of course, we're going to root out enemies within the state who've tried to overthrow us. There are also a lot of people, half the country at least, who believe that these are part of a spiraling decline in Turkish democracy. I think, in a sense, the most important target for us is actually the first half. The most important target for us in terms of our outreach is convincing folks who do believe that Turkey needs to take aggressive action in the face of the Islamic coup. We have to convince them that that's true, but that what's gone on instead has actually undermined Turkish security, undermined Turkish democracy, undermined Turkish rights. And I think there is a portion of that population that's gettable.
Okay, any other questions for Howard, for Emily?
Go ahead.
It sounds like a potentially very slow process. Is there anything else that could be done kind of more on an emergency basis to get these people out of these terrible conditions? The UN or?
I don't think that we can force them out. I think we have to convince the Turkish government that it's not in their interest to hold them. And that means two things simultaneously. It means demonstrating the costs that this has had for Turkey and for Turkey's standing, but it also means being very careful in the way we campaign so that we're not personally attacking Erdogan, and we're not sort of suggesting that Turkey itself is a bad country. The worst possible situation that we could create is one in which the narrative is amnesty is attacking Turkey and allow the government to wrap itself in the flag.
There was someone else that had a question.
Yeah, I'm wondering if the Turkish community in the United States has gotten involved at all in protesting this repression by the government of Turkey.
It has. I think by electoral returns, we know that the Turkish community in the United States overall is not supportive of the current government. But they're certainly vocal populations that are, and the Turkish government is very adept at trying to mobilize them. One of the challenges for Amnesty is that we want to cooperate with those organizations, but we also need to not get pulled into sort of domestic political fights.
Anyone else? Anyone else have a question for Howard?
This is David again. Sure. If I remember correctly, I read that the Turkish parliament was dissolved and a new one was reinstated. Is their parliament passing legislation that intentionally takes away the rights and abilities of human rights activists to do their jobs?
So I want to sort of correct that a little bit. What happened was there was a referendum in April in which a series of constitutional reforms were passed in, and a presidential system was instituted. The parliament that was standing in April is still standing, and there won't be, unless early elections are called, that new system won't be instituted until 2019. It's the less of a concern than parliamentary laws at this point is the fact that Turkey has since July of last year been under effectively a type of a state of emergency in which the cabinet can govern by decree. And the decrees have undermined judicial independence. They've circumscribed the freedom of expression. And you know, this goes. Private companies can be expropriated under this state of emergency with the stroke of a pen. NGOs, nearly 1,000 NGOs have been closed down and their property confiscated simply by decree and hundreds in a single day. And so, you know, a state of emergency that abrogates sort of basic rule of law, that abrogates due process, that allows for lengthy pretrial detention, that allows the state to intervene in an industry and in civil society gratuitously has been in place since July of last year, and the Turkish government's not shy about using those powers. They're not limited to sort of, you know, issues of civil order. It goes to everything from environmental law to new civic projects.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Final questions for? Okay. Let's move along. Emily, do you want to start taking us into, you know, what people can do, the actions that we can take? Emily?
So sorry about that. My connection was unstable. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Perfect. So thank you, Howard, for all that information and everyone for your thoughtful questions. This is a great conversation and I'm looking forward to it continuing. So as we've discussed, you know, these are our friends and colleagues and we won't rest until they're free. And I'd like to talk now about a few ways you can get involved and contribute to the campaign to free them. So first I want to talk about, and Howard mentioned this, but how will we do this? What's the overall theory of how we'll be able to get them released? And the overall theory is that, you know, we need to create a global outcry to demonstrate that the world is watching. The Turkish government has to understand that as long as these activists and other defenders remain imprisoned, the world cannot continue business as usual with the Turkish government. And as Howard mentioned before, we have to demonstrate the ongoing cost of keeping them imprisoned. So fundamentally, to put it really simply, it has to become more of a headache for the government to keep them imprisoned than to release them. So how do we tip that scale? How do we add to that scale? And there's been some very encouraging progress, but much more needs to be done. So what do we mean when we say that leaders must understand that business as usual can't continue? One example of this, a very strong example that Howard might have mentioned, is the German government's response. So after, you know, there are two foreign nationals, so two non-Turkish citizens detained among the 10, one from Germany and one from Sweden. And the German government reacted very strongly, basically elevating their travel warning to German citizens, saying, we can't effectively protect you. If you travel to Turkey, we can't protect you from being arbitrarily detained. And they also provided an investment advisory and, you know, follow the money. And that's also where you'll find things happening. So they said, you know, we can't guarantee a stable environment for investments as well. And that inspired a voracious response from the Turkish government, potentially a little bit too hostile. But that's a way of demonstrating that, you know, this is a red line. And as long as this happens, you know, business as usual, and even literally, cannot continue. And this is a stake that the Turkish government and Erdogan has in cooperation with the U.S. When he was here just this past May, he met with 30 to 40 business leaders of U.S. corporations and companies. And so this is a key a group of key stakeholders that can have an influence as well. So when thinking about how to join this campaign, I'd like to frame the areas of work kind of in two separate ways. One is personal connection and personal narrative sharing and engaging new people into the work. So this is connected to really one of the core values of the human rights defenders work and really Amnesty's work in general historically. And that's to use the personal stories and the individual narratives of these activists to engage new people in our work in this campaign. So while sometimes it can be hard to connect and engage new folks with even very dire statistics, such as, you know, 50,000 people in prison, it can be much, much easier to engage someone new by showing a picture of Idil, the director of AI Turkey, and her cat, for instance, to share that, you know, she loves books, she does yoga, and she has close friends that, you know, she loves spending time with. And she's dedicated to human rights, and she's told us that her time behind bars has only made her more determined to continue this struggle. So we'll be sharing resources. There's going to be actually an action page on our website for Turkey specifically for this case, where you can find resources that are directed, that do more to share the personal stories, including videos, quotes, even fact pages about the individual. So you can use that as a tool in engaging new people in your community, sharing the stories and connecting people that way. And the other area, apart from this personal connection, narrative sharing is making sure that, you know, we can contribute to the effort to make a global outcry about business as usual. This will not continue. And there's several ways that you can do this. I'm going to talk really briefly about some of the action opportunities that are always at your fingertips. And then I want to touch specifically on what we're calling the Global Day of Action coming up and spend some time talking about that. So we have an online action that's directing towards the Minister of Justice and the Turkish ambassador. So when you share it with people who take it as well, that sends a message directly to those officials and lets them know that you're demanding that they're released. That's an easy way to engage people, especially online for the first time who might not know about the case. So I encourage you to find that online and just give me an email if you'd like that sent directly to you, and I'm happy to share that. You can write letters directed at the Minister of Justice, to the Turkish embassy in DC in the US. You can make phone calls to the embassy. One thing that's really important is talking to your elected officials, which we'll hear more about from Sierra. So tell them that this matters to you. You want them to do more to speak out. And we've seen interest from, you know, your members of Congress and from other officials in this case and in what's happening in Turkey. So it's not new to them, but they need to hear from more people to let them know that, you know, people care about this. It's still on the radar. And there are concrete things they can do to help. And that's something very uniquely that you can do because you are, you know, some of the only members in your districts, you know, in your parts of the country, in your state, in your city. And so you as constituents have a really unique power to bring to this campaign. So we can talk more later about how you can do that. And again, we'll hear from Sierra on that specifically. Last thing I'll mention before going into the day of action is that this case is in Right for Rights this year. So when you're thinking about planning your Right for Rights activities, you'll know that, you know, this is going to be one of the 10 focus cases, and we're actually going to be prioritizing it in Right for Rights among AIUSA. So you'll be seeing lots of more resources and action opportunities from us in the coming months. That was a lot in a very quick time period, because I know we're running short on time and I really want to get to the day of action and discuss this among ourselves. So the day of action is going to take place on October 14th. This is in about 3 weeks, a little less than 3 weeks. And this is the birthday of Adil Asser. So what we want to do during this day is to demonstrate support for Adil, to raise awareness, and to reach new audiences by highlighting the absurdity of Adil spending her birthday behind bars just for her peaceful work that any of us could be doing on a daily basis. I'm not sure if this was mentioned earlier, but one of the things that Adil is being investigated for under suspicion of is an urgent action. And I don't know how many of you have taken urgent actions, have participated in the network, but it really strikes close to home. And so just highlighting the absurdity of this. And the reason that this kind of theme was selected for the day is that we were looking for, the global movement was looking for something that people all around the world could connect with. And, you know, what's more international and globally understandable than a birthday celebration? So what we'll be doing, we'll be providing resources for folks to take actions. And these range from smaller actions to larger ones that can be planned. And this will be featured on the Turkey online webpage that you can download resources from and get more information. But just to touch on them briefly, we can support you hosting an offline actual birthday party for Adil. You can take pictures with signs of support. You can even have a birthday cake. Send to us over email these pictures or post onto online platforms with the hashtag #PartyWithAdil. And this is going to be a globally used hashtag. So all around the world on this day, in different countries, people are going to be lighting birthday candles and having these offline gatherings in support of Adil and sharing this, so we can make sure that, you know, people know that her case is not forgotten, their case is not forgotten, and we're in solidarity. There'll be resources available very soon for download to host these events. We're developing kind of tongue-in-cheek Your Invited flyers, which can either be literally meant to invite people to your gathering, but also just to invite people to take action and engage in the campaign. You're invited to become a member of this campaign and to speak up. You're invited to be a human rights defender. There'll also be a birthday card action. So you can either create your own cards of support for Adil, more solidarity themed, saying you stand with her on this day. But we'll also have available for download or for your own creation a more targeted action. So a card that we can send to the Minister of Justice, basically stating that on Adil's birthday, this day that she's behind bars, your birthday wish for her is that she's released and the minister has the power to make sure that she doesn't spend another birthday behind bars. And thinking more broadly, you can think about how you might use this hook to bring new people in from your community into the work. Again, given this, pretty relatable theme of a birthday celebration, both how you can get more people to take action with you, but also, as we mentioned, having U.S. government officials speak out more strongly is crucial. And if you're able to convince your members of Congress to get on board by demonstrating that, you know, maybe 50 or 100 or even a couple hundred people in your city support them speaking out, if you can get their names, their zip codes, their information, that could be a crucial way in moving this forward and making sure that a global outcry is heard. Now, I know we only have about 10 minutes left. We have to, we get to hear some really great info on how to lobby. But I also want to make some space for any ideas people have around this day. So given that this is the theme, here are a couple ideas for ways to engage. One of the great things about having these calls is that we have a wealth of experience from everyone on the call on how you can make this happen in your community. And so if we've run out of time today, I'm happy to continue this conversation on a different call or over email, but would love to hear people's thoughts as well.
My group is going to have a tabling event towards the end of October. And a lot of times it helps simply to have a petition with a face on it. Are these materials defined on the webs? I mean, if I go to AIUSA and search on Turkey, will this pop up?
So we're finalizing the webpage right now, but it will be, I'll create it to be something very simple, like amnestyusa.org/Istanbul10 or Free Rights Defenders. And if you're interested, perhaps we can, I don't know how we could do this, Ed, but we can share once that link is up with participants in the call, you know, where you can find those resources and what webpage you can visit.
Yeah, I think it would be a really good idea to share it down with area coordinators and student activist coordinators to push out to groups, you know, student and local groups is, you know, something of an activity to do within the next month. You know, everything that you suggested about, you know, the party and the pictures and sharing, you know, that's a possibility too.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll definitely be doing that. It's going to be in the activism guide as well.
Oh, perfect. Okay, great. Yeah. Before we went on, I just want to say, Howard, did you have something to add to that about actions to be taken?
Yeah, I guess I did. I think so that there's the first half is sort of generating popular interest and bringing this to the fore. One of the problems that I think we're facing, particularly after the quiet period, is that the cases has sort of fallen to the background of people's minds. It got a lot of news coverage, but then sort of other horrors in other places have replaced it. And so we need to bring it back to the fore. The second and maybe related point has to do with Congress. My sense is that there are for a lot of reasons, Congress is willing to be fairly aggressive on Turkey. And we've seen evidence of that both on the Senate side and the House side. But it's not clear to me that it's getting a lot of popular push on the specific issue of detained human rights workers. And so I think it's really incumbent on us as we move out of this quiet period to remind Congress that this is a really important issue and to make sure that as staff sort of think about how they're going to shape their policies on Turkey, that this remains a big part of that quotient.
Okay, great. If anyone else has ideas, you can always share them with me, with Emily. You respond to me through the email. Any ideas that you have, any help that you'd like to have with your groups or whatever. I do want to make sure that we have time for Sierra because she has some important information to share out with us, and I'm really glad to have her on the call. Sierra?
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me. My name is Sierra. I am the legislative coordinator for the state of Florida with Amnesty. This past weekend, I was in D.C., for the lobby, for the Legislative Coordinator Institute through Amnesty. And this Monday, I had the chance to lobby some of my state representatives about this issue. I received an issue brief that I was able to distribute to my representatives and have a conversation with them about how important this is. And I met with the legislative assistant for Kathy Castor. And a couple questions they had for me were about the crisis in general, and I had to explain to them about the coup and all the political instability that's been going on, like we talked about in the beginning of this call, because not everyone is aware of it. Sometimes here in the United States, our media is not as expansive as we would like it to be. And they also asked me a lot about what they could do, which is featured on our issue brief, but we were asking elected representatives to make statements on, you know, on the Congress floor, to make public statements through social media, to put out press statements. And we're also asking them to, if they have any private meetings with Turkish officials, or if they have any poll with the Turkish community, both United States and in DC and other places, to utilize that as well. So the team for Kathy Castor, the representative, the House rep for, I believe, District 22 in Florida, her team was very interested in everything, very sympathetic to the struggles of these people. She is a Democrat, so she, I believe, tends to be more sympathetic to human rights issues. But I do have a meeting scheduled for Marco Rubio's team this upcoming week to talk about it as well. And they seem very concerned with the issue. So
they will be friendly.
Yes. Yes, I actually had a meeting scheduled with them, but Malala was in town. So they canceled. So they're definitely interested in human rights. And I'm very excited to talk to them, as well as Bill Nelson. Hopefully Florida can, you know, take the lead and start putting out a lot of statements. They've been very proactive on a lot of other issues. And when I was telling the legislative assistant from Kathy Kasser's office about how much of a detriment having both our chair and our director from Turkey being imprisoned were, they were very sympathetic. And I related it back to our current political time, where the right to protest, the right to the freedom of speech, that is something that's being questioned here in the United States. And having something so relevant going on at the same time really, really drew them in. So it might seem like it's a really far away place to a lot of people, but once you relate it back to the United States, they're very attentive, they're very concerned. So I found that very, very comforting.
That's great. That's really a great report out. I really appreciate that. Does anybody have a question for Sierra about lobbying and her experiences?
There was a really good comment from Chip, which I agree with entirely from my experience lobbying. Just a quick note that it's important not to assume that only Dems are sympathetic to human rights issues. Lots of progress depends on maintaining our independence and partiality and the universality of these concerns. Certainly matches my experience. I've had some Democrats who've been very sympathetic and very very active in the way they've engaged on this. But it goes on both sides of the aisle. And actually, I think that's a talking point for us, because this is an issue, and for about a lot of reasons that don't have to do with amnesty, it's one of the places where folks in the Congress, folks in the Senate, can come together across the aisles to work on this issue, where they might not be willing to do so on other issues.
I totally agree.
Great, that's a great point. Stephanie, I know you're on the call. Do you have anything to add to this?
Oh, sorry, I was on mute.
Of course.
Just to say that, you know, if anyone wants a copy of that issue brief, do reach out to me, or Emily has it as well. And if you'd like to lobby your member of Congress in your state, get in touch and we can connect you with your legislative coordinator. So that you can also take part.
Great, thanks. Stephanie was a great part of the Legislative Coordinators Institute this past weekend, so thank you for that.
Of course.
Anyone else have any final questions for any of our panelists this evening? Or any final thoughts? Ideas, anything?
Will the upcoming materials and actions only be distributed through coordinators?
That's a good question. So I think, this is Emily speaking, I think what we'll do is prior to the day of action, we will send an email to a broader list of supporters. And that will include, you know, the general like update and take action, but it'll also include a link to the landing page, the web page that will have information on how you can take action and download resources. So, so we'll of course do everything to distribute it to, you know, through chains of member leadership, but also we'll try to share it out via larger email bursts as well.
Thanks.
But Dorothy, if you're interested in, if you want to make sure that you receive it,
you feel free to. I'm sorry, I can't.
Emily, you were fading out there.
I think what Emily just said is that if you are concerned about it, she'll make sure that you get it individually.
Hello, this is Azam, coordinator for Group 139 in Wisconsin. I have a couple questions and comments. On October 28th, we are going to have our Midwest Regional Conference. And for that reason, I think we have a good opportunity to do activity on behalf of the defenders of human rights in various parts of the world. However, it would be very helpful if you could provide us, you mentioned that from each region of the world, we are going to have one case. It would be helpful if you could provide us with that one particular case so that we can share that, as well as we have other cases pertaining to Iran and other areas in the Middle East, which is boiling. Mm-hmm. We would be at present time, we are making petition for them as well, which I would be happy to share it with you when they all are ready.
Thank you. And that's a really important point, and I'm so glad you brought that up regarding the regional conferences. So I'll be at the Midwest Conference and also the Northeast. And we are going to have not only for both of those conferences, we're going to have a panel on human rights defenders on the campaign. And what I'm trying to do is to get someone who knows one of the Istanbul 10 imprisoned personally to be able to video in and talk about her experience and her, you know, friendship with one of those imprisoned and how that's affecting her and both of them. And also there's going to be a workshop on how you can help free the Istanbul 10. So there's going to be something available for activists to attend and learn more and work with us there. And finally, in Action Alley, there's going to be a human rights defenders display where we'll have more information and action opportunities as well. But definitely happy to share information about those five cases or the other four cases ahead of time. Absolutely.
Okay. Now, just one more almost related. Is almost time for Right for Rights. Are those cases going to be also ready by say, October?
Yeah, I think that they'll be ready by October. The cases are already selected. We're just working on getting the website up and running. And I can say now, very excitingly, that all 10 cases this year are human rights defender cases aligning with the global campaign. Some are prisoners of conscience and some are just at risk, but they will all be human rights defenders. I think that the website will launch by regional conference time. So we'll have signups there as well.
Okay, so is it possible to get that list prior to that conference so that we can prepare our sign-up sheet for our group?
I'm not sure, but let's connect offline about that, maybe with the field organizers. So Carolina or Ernest covering your region, I believe. If you're in, are you in Wisconsin? Is that right?
Well, I'm in Wisconsin, and I
right.
Yeah.
I will also say that next month's membership call will be on Right for Rights. So we'll be covering what knowledge we have there. And I just wanted to say that Azam has been doing really great work with her group in Wisconsin. So thank you. Thank you for that. And I wanted to say with Dorothy too, if you need to connect with me, you know, send me an email or Emily, we'll get you that information. Any final thoughts or questions? No?
If there aren't any questions, I just want to say thanks to everyone for taking the time to join this on your Wednesday evenings. And I'm really excited to work with each of you to help free our friends and colleagues and activists in Turkey. So please feel free to get in touch. My email's in the chat section of the talk, and we'll look for more information soon on the website.
Yeah. So let me take the opportunity to thank each of our wonderful speakers this evening for sharing their knowledge, their expertise with us. They're Emily Walsh, Howard Eisenstadt, and Sierra Benice. Thanks also to all of you who called in and those who shared questions and comments. So remember, too, that all the monthly calls are recorded, and we will list them in the Activist Resource Community, which is ARC, on the website. Please join us again next month for Right for Rights. And I think we can end there. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a good evening.
Thank you, and good night.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.